I've been a longtime lover of sci-fi, as you might imagine from looking at my channel and my show over the years. And one of the coolest parts for sci-fi for me is all of the weird, wacko weaponry that we've come up with for our future. But are these weapons realistic in any way? Could we one day be carrying around laser rifles and rail cannons in our Vietnam analog? Or are we already at our peak? Let's talk about it on this episode of WayTat. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of WayTat. I'm your host, William, and I will be talking all about sci-fi weaponry today. And, yeah, I'm really gonna have to expand the update corner before the next time. Because we are absolutely running out of space. And again, as I've said on Twitter, I'm sorry for the delay. Unfortunately, we've all been sick here at the WayTat household. Some salmonella snuck in somehow, and we've been trying to recover from it. Luckily, not at the exact same time, and we've narrowed it down to a food item that has since been dragged into the streets and executed on live television. But, hey, if you want to help me out in the future, make sure to keep spreading the show, tell your friends, like, comment, and subscribe. Also, while you're at it, make sure to check out Mystic Luna on Shopify to help out the other victim of this horrendous illness. Also, make sure to check out Winkashika and follow them on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. But now that we've gotten all of our intro out of the way, let's get on to the show. Now, much like our armor bonanza that we had a while ago, our weapon bonanza is going to be in a few categories, and we're going to be going through the pros and cons. But we're also going to be talking about what these weapons would even do to you if it hits you, since, you know, that's a thing that a lot of us sci-fi writers get wrong, too. So, what's our categories? First is energy weaponry. These are things that shoot highly energized particles at targets that are not physical. Second are projectile weapons. These are things that launch a physical projectile, energized or not. And finally, we're going to do wacky weapons, which can either be one from above, but are just weird, wacky, and nonsensical. And you'll see what that means. So, let's get started with our energy weapons, with the most popular kind of energy weapon in all of fiction. Lasers. These are directed energy weapons, a DEW, that uses a focused proton beam to create a single tiny point of heat or overwhelm sensors. And how hot are we talking? Oh, you know, nothing too serious, just about 1800 fucking degrees Fahrenheit, which is 1000 degrees Celsius if you're a scholar, which is enough to melt steel, by the way. Concentrated on a point essentially as small as you want. Now, we should quickly address the common thing that's done in sci-fi that we don't do in real life. Visual lasers. While they do look cool and everything and help your readers and audience see what's going on, the unfortunate reality is that it's a big strategic misstep. Because the reason why you'd want to have it is for shot tracking, which, hey, that is useful. But at the same time, it means your enemy can trace it, too, removing one of laser's biggest strengths. Although you could do it and wouldn't really affect anything. And if you really wanted to track shots, you could just put a laser pointer on the end of it. But before we move on to actual pros and cons, what would this do to a human body? Well, have you ever seen water flash boil? Like, put in the microwave and then toss something into it. Yeah, that, but it's your very squishy human bodily fluids. and since water, and thus most bodily fluids, boil around 212 degrees, well, basically your entire body would heat to 1800 degrees Fahrenheit, and you'd experience something that scientists call, holy shit, that guy just popped like a fucking grape. But, okay, let's talk about those pros and cons. Well, on the good side, lasers are in all practical terms instantaneous. Since it's photons, the moment you pull the trigger, it'll hit the target, assuming you're at normal fighting ranges and not astronomical distances away. Also, as long as the system is receiving power, it's a very cheap weapon to fire. They're also silent and have absolutely zero recoil, making them great surprise and stealth weapons, especially when using an invisible laser. And they're easily scalable, maybe even on the exact same weapon with different power outputs, going from temporarily blinding someone to blasting a goddamn hole in your head. Check your phasers, boys. Now, for the bad side, first, and unfortunately, you do need a shitload of juice to make laser weapons work, which is a problem if you just so happen to not have infinite energy, and this is going to come up a lot, by the way. Also, you're going to need some real beefers of a cooling system, because the amount of heat you produce will also affect the weapon. Obviously not 1,000 degrees Celsius, but it'll still get hot and burn your ass. They also can't be fired anything out of sight, since it's basically just a straight line, time-to-meet-grandma beam, so any kind of support weapon or artillery is just out of the question. And then there's also the part about what if you miss? Because you're not just going to hit a wall, or it'll soar off, lose inertia, and fall. No, it'll hit something, or go sailing into the horizon until it gets dispersed. Meaning a strong enough laser cannon shot could just end up in space. Which, hey, that's not very good for containing the destruction, especially because if you have a bunch of laser weapons hitting in vaguely the same area, you're raising the ambient heat very suddenly by several hundred to thousand degrees, which, you know, that tends to cause fires. But perhaps the worst part of it is that any, and I mean any kind of atmospheric conditions, will reduce the laser's effectiveness. And why is that? Well, it's because of what you're shooting. See, photons are pretty commonly deflected and redirected. I mean, that's how light works on Earth. Here, for example, cover your eyes. There you go, you just block photons. Now, applied to lasers, this means that anything from reflective surfaces to water droplets to dust to smoke and even heat shimmers are going to strip photons as the laser passes through it. So if you're under fire from lasers, it'd be a good idea to pop smoke, saturate the air with water, and get behind something shiny. But what do all of these things mean combined? Are we going to be carrying around laser rifles in the future? Well, it's tempting to say yes, probably not. Because sure, their ease of use and cheapness would make for great primary weapons. You really need to give this to people you can trust not miss every third shot. And you also wouldn't want to issue it in numbers where your gun line firing at close range suddenly has to go on medical leave for heat stroke. So in a more grounded sci-fi, this probably would only get issued to marksmen and guerrilla troops, and installed as like point defense weapons on ships, planes, and buildings, because, again, pinpoint accuracy. But now we move on to the next energy weapon, plasma. These are due to use a cloud or bolt of superheated plasma, the secret magical fourth state of matter, to launch at targets. Now, unlike popular depictions, these weapons wouldn't be a pure plasma bolt. Because if you have any experience with an air cannon or one of those goofy-ass stench launchers, they don't really have much of a range, if any. And that's because air generally doesn't like to be contained in a smaller space than what's available. And plasma, being more energetic than air, is even worse at sitting still. Phrased another way, air, or gas, is like a kindergartner in the kids section of a museum with the baby gate open. Plasma is a different kindergartner, except with an ADHD diagnosis, unattentive parents, and about 2 pixie sticks deep out of 7. So you need some way to contain that energy and keep it generally coherent. So you have 3 options. If you really don't care and just know everything vaguely in front of you needs to die, you can ignore the whole thing and just release a cloud of plasma. If you're okay with it turning into a ballistic weapon, you can use a magnetic slug, but there's a chance it won't stick too well to this either. So the third and most likely option is to generate a magnetic field in front of the weapon before firing, which can actually get you to a pretty decent range. And what would plasma do when it contacts the body? Well, as you can imagine, probably something very similar to lasers, but with a twist. See, because being shot by this weapon would cause massive, immense burns all across your body, like third degree at best. But then even worse for you is that plasma is also an unbelievable conductor, meaning if whoever shot you is a real asshole and fired ionized plasma at you as well, now you're also getting electrocuted. What a dick. Also, the reason why it's not, like, blowing you up instantly, even though it's hotter, is that because plasma is matter, it has to do a heat transfer. So it's a heat transfer vessel, while laser is just instantaneously turning a part of your body that hot. Anyways, now for the pros and cons. On the good side of plasma, the first benefit is pretty minor, but is kind of important in a sci-fi world. Electronic disruption. Since plasma is highly energetic and is very good at displacing electrons, when it contacts those tasty, tangy computer components, it'll fuck those up real bad. Now, since you're using a magnetic field tunnel, your plasma weapon is also going to be pretty accurate. And you're going to get a pretty good energy transfer, too, when it hits, because plasma is great at transferring heat and electricity, especially to solid matter. Which means, you guessed it, pretty fucking good damage. Now, given that you also don't really need a whole lot of matter to turn into plasma, and you're able to use air in a pinch, the logistics and ammunition costs and considerations for plasma is pretty low considered to most... is pretty low compared to most traditional weapons. Now, the last pro might not even be something you'd consider, but it's actually pretty clever. See, because the plasma, if you've ever used a plasma cutter, is fucking bright as hell. And that, combined with the rapidly expanding superheated gases that result at the end of the shot, can heavily saturate an area with heat, light, and probably a shitload of stuff that you don't want to breathe in. If only for a few moments, which makes plasma ideal for area denial and blocking line of sight. So if your troops need to keep an enemy from re-inhabiting a particular section of a trench, focusing plasma fire there isn't exactly a bad idea by any stretch of the imagination. However, plasma weapons do have some pretty serious drawbacks. First of all, as probably one of several elephants in the room, is its exceptionally low impact force. Since it doesn't really have much, if any, mass to speak of, plasma doesn't have much of an impact. I mean, it's also not really going to, like, try to pierce through anything. Meaning, not only does it dissipate fast, but it's really relying on that heat transfer. Which, mind, is not an issue for lasers, because it's turning photons into heat, not transferring it. Another elephant is how short range it would be. Because even if you can magnetically stabilize it, an infantry-sized weapon would not have very good engagement range at all, especially if you're fighting in air where it can cool down on its way to the target. Then add on to that the massive power requirement to create enough plasma fast enough to shoot it, and the fact that the components you need would be very heavy makes the whole weapon kind of paradoxical. Short range, very heavy weapon that needs a big logistical tail for its power source, but heavily reduces the need for ammo. But there's another con. See, that whole area denial thing is all fine and good. But up close, where you'd probably be using this, suddenly using a plasma weapon becomes a massive heat hazard. In fact, holding it in any way that resembles a rifle would probably burn you without using protective gear. If you caught yourself in the blast, you're also getting third-degree burns. So then, who is this for? Well, honestly, in all reality, probably no one. Because a plasma weapon essentially catches because a plasma weapon essentially catch-22s itself out of most usable forms. So it'd probably only be particularly useful or even usable in a handful of ways. As a grenade or bomb, as a close combat anti-vehicle weapon of some kind, or mounted onto a vehicle to act as an anti-infantry and anti-light armor deterrent. Which, look, you're not going to need that last one unless you're dealing with some real crazy aliens that want a melee attack. And on to our next weapon, ion weapons. These are weapons that fire a beam of electrically charged particles to overload and disable electrical signals, which sounds like it would be good against machines and electronic targets. But keep in mind that you also work on electrical signals. So while yes, effective, especially against machines, biological signals can also be affected. And while sure, you can pretend that this creates some magical ion bullet, that's not what the physics behind this weapon would be. See, ions have a habit of releasing their ionic charge on basically the first thing they touch. They're real hordes like that. So what this gun would do is basically release an unending barrage of ions in the direction of the target until you've quote-unquote burned an ionic tunnel through the atmosphere to the target to then deliver a good healthy dose of ions directly to the balls. Which, if that sounds slow, for a do, it is, but this could honestly happen pretty fast. And make the air spicy and smell like ozone. Which is probably a drawback, all things considered, but hey, you know, if you're a freak. Now, what effect would this have on your body? Well, did you know that radiation is ions? Yeah, you'd basically instantly get a massive radiation burn and acute radiation sickness. Oh, and also electrical burns might interact chemically with some of your cells, and also just destroy whatever nerves it hits on the way in and out. Although in the last one, I don't know how much you're going to care, considering all the other things it does to you. So let's go to the pros and cons. Alright, so the first benefit, if you can believe it after all of that, is that you can make these weapons non-lethal. Now, that may sound weird, but it's because you can dial the amount of power you put into it. Meaning, you can make the whole radiation thing go from wumbo to, like, an x-ray exam. But keep around the whole nerve damage, surface burns, and nerve disruption. All of which is technically non-lethal, but probably wouldn't be used for something like policing. More like taking war prisoners. Now, secondly, is that it's extremely effective against any kind of electrical systems or anything that's conductive. Since you're basically randomly stripping and attaching electrons from things, meaning it can just cause massive, unpredictable damage. Third, it's very fast operating speed. Since ions can carry a charge at basically the speed of light, you're dealing with a ton of light speed interactions just one after the other after the other. Which means you'll be on the same speed as laser weaponry, effectively. And finally, ion weapons would be very precise. If you stay on target, they will hit. On the bad side, relative, they're slow to fire. Because you're needing to burn out this ionic tunnel in the air, meaning you're holding the trigger for a few seconds to a few minutes, depending on the range. This also means that the best targets are ones coming at you, not moving, or are too slow to get out of the way. Since if they move too much, you won't get a good shot. There's also the risk that if there's any kind of sudden deviation in shooting conditions, it'll just ionize whatever is directly in front of you, which is, not good. I hope that's obvious. And, of course, like all other DO weapons, the power bill. Because the amount of power here is pretty big, as is the amount of heat. And all of this combines into a weapon that will probably go the same way as plasma. Useful on vehicle mounts, or very, very close range. But ion weapons have an extra bonus. That since ions can be created and used more stably and with less energy than plasma, ionic torpedoes and such could actually be a possibility, where the warheads of weapons are ionized or ionize the target, which could then make your shoulder-mounted rocket launchers not only incredibly damaging, but also cause electronic disruptions. But as its own standalone weapon, probably a bit unlikely. So then let's move on to particle beam weapons. And these are weapons that take the subatomic particles of atoms, strips them from the atom, and then accelerates it and all its other friends as a concentrated beam of particles traveling in near light speed to cause both kinetic and heat damage. Now, if you're thinking that this sounds familiar, good, you're paying attention. Because ion guns are a form of particle beam, and even plasma in some contexts could be compared to this. And that leaves us with four types of particle weapons. Electron beam weapons use very lightweight electrons, which scatter easily but have deeper penetration than your MILF goth mom has on me. Proton beam weapons, which similarly penetrate very deeply but also irradiate like Spider-Man's radioactive spider jizz, but given that protons like to attach to things, they'll also have to be given a neutral charge to maintain coherency. Neutron beams, being heavy and neutral particles, would be excellent for passing through the air coherently and generating a lot of heat and radiation, but would probably pass through a target with minimal kinetic impact. And finally, muon beams. And we're not talking about muons, that's a whole can of worms. But they're like electrons, but heavier and very short-lived, which would make them very coherent with very little spread, but basically the exact same benefits. Now, let's simplify back down again. What would a particle gun do to your body? Well, given that's just dumping a shit ton of energy, the first thing that would happen is the immediate impact area would probably just vaporize. And anything not vaporized would shatter apart at the molecular level. If you understand DNA and human cells, that's what they call a massive fucking problem. Oh, and then the shockwave from the superheated air recovering from the kinetic and thermal shock would hit you, which, compared to everything else, doesn't sound that bad, but still probably hurt a bit at least. And if you survive that, you're going to get radiation sickness, probably suffer some neurological damage, and probably never be okay again. So, pros. First of all, as you might imagine, from the four different varieties we ran through, you have a wide range of different types of particle beam weapons you can create. Now, could you make one that can switch between them? Yeah, I think so. But I'm not entirely sure anyone would want to think about how to engineer something that's capable of that. Still, you have a lot of versatility. Even if you need to swap out parts, the same gun can do it all. Secondly, the impact. Now, while they're firing very, very small things, they are things with mass, traveling very, very fast, meaning they can hit pretty hard, more than you'd probably expect. However, they're also really stealthy weapons, since there's no light or noise associated with firing it necessarily, meaning no one would know that you fired it. And you're not even really dealing with recoil, because you're using essentially a miniature particle accelerator and magnetic field to launch these very, very small objects. The amount of recoil is certainly measurable with a very precise, delicate instrument, but you're probably not going to notice. Also, the damage you're talking about is massive and essentially body armor proof. The particles destabilize basically whatever they touch and impart a lot of energy, but are also so small, the odds of striking something directly and being stopped is really low, making them able to pass through protection very easily, crumble it behind them, and then irradiate and blast apart the meat underneath and keep going. Now with the cons, starting with what I would consider barely a con, it's slower than light, which for a sci-fi weapon is an actual issue, because if you're competing with lasers, they'll outpace you. Instant is better than any other speed. But power requirements are at laser level, if not worse. On top of that, these things disperse within nanoseconds. Is that a problem if your target is within a few kilometers of you? Not particularly, but it's still important to know that you can't really crank this down without losing basically all the power from it. Added to that is that if the particles are charged, they're repelled from each other, meaning that you need to somehow neutralize them as they leave the barrel, or they'll just fucking scatter away from each other. How do you do this? I have no fucking idea. I'm not a physicist. Which does actually bring up the next point quite well. These things are highly complex and complicated pieces of hardware. Like, I mean, prohibitively expensive and complicated to put together and use. Which, sure, in a vacuum, isn't that much of a problem. But are you really gonna hand a grunt a science textbook as a field manual detailing how to manage a fucking particle accelerator? Probably not. And as is basically a given for these weapons, heat is also an issue. And this puts particle weapons on the same boat as lasers, primarily a specialist weapon if used at all by infantry. But with this one, both void and vehicle models would probably be a lot more common and easier to logistically justify. Fewer crayon-chewing grunts to fuck up the delicate wiring. Now we move on to microwave weapons. Microwaves fire an electromagnetic pulse that causes damage to electronics and disrupt biological systems. And how do they do that? Well, the same way that microwave ovens cook food and make funny noises when you put metal in them. Microwave radiation bounces off metal, causing it to heat in the process, is absorbed by fat and water, which causes it to heat, and passes through other materials. And this can surge electrical systems and cause overheating in mechanics and electronics. And as you can imagine, the effect on the human body is pretty intense. Speaking of which, if you were hit with one of these weapons, what would happen to you? Well, funnily enough, we know because we've made these. But we use the low-powered option that causes instant overwhelming heating that causes a jolt reaction and makes the human body automatically run away because your lizard brain takes over. It's used for crowd control. But if you were to up the juice and emit a massive amount of microwaves, then you'd basically be cooking someone like a microwave oven. They would develop very deep, very painful burns, and the epicenter would just necrose almost instantly. If you hit someone in the head or somewhere with low blood flow, like the ball sack, like, literally, that's one of the places you could hit someone, then all of those sensitive organs would begin to fry and boil. They would then go into shock from the heat and their nerves being forcefully activated. If the damage was near the head, then they'd get brain damage. And you'd also burst a lot of blood vessels, cause organ damage, and cook their blood and internal fluids basically instantly. So you'd certainly kill them, but it would not be quick, painless, or pleasant. This is the damage you deal if you want someone to hurt very, very bad first. So if you're using this and don't want that, max out the heat settings and aim for the head, and they hopefully will just pop. So here's the pros. First of all, these weapons would activate at light speed, again, making them instant like laser guns. Again, if we're competing against lasers, this is very important. Although these ones really don't have the instant effect that lasers do. Now, also, because heat is less of a concern than the other weapons, the ammunition is essentially endless. You really don't ever have to stop firing as long as you have power. They're also very cheap, especially compared to other methods of electronic disruption and crowd control. They also have a wide area of effect, because microwaves have strong spread, but aren't reduced much by air, giving them a wide damage cone. And, like I brought up earlier, you can alter the amount of juice you give the weapon to scale up or down the amount of damage it'll do. From mild fuckery to devastation. They're also entirely silent and invisible, meaning there's no indication that anything ever happened. On the bad side, though, there's no indication that anything even happened. Yeah, because it doesn't cause electronics to, like, fucking explode, it's hard to tell if it's had an effect on the target. Even worse than that, some electronics might be resistant, or got lucky, or are surge resistant, or downright immune, or have countermeasures that are also invisible. So it's kind of unpredictable in that sense. Additionally, because of its wide area, it has a very limited range. The further the beam spreads, the harder it is to calculate exactly where it'll end up. So while sure, it's technically got a good range, that range ends up being pretty useless, meaning it's more effective up close. And its wide area also means it has high collateral damage. Basically, anything Khan's radius will get hit, which doesn't sound good when your own electronics are in the target area. And these weapons, like all do, are power-hungry little shits. On top of that, this one only eats high voltage, meaning there's a minimum size requirement. And finally, there's health and ethics concerns about using this thing. Because a slight miss, or a little bit too little power, or someone just so happens to have some microwave resistance for some reason, they won't die instantly. And if it's used non-lethally, we don't know what the long-term health effects and damage is yet. So it's very risky, because you might end up causing way more harm than what you want to. So this all probably means microwave weapons are best left as anti-electronic, vehicle-support heavy weapons, or vehicle-mounted weapons. Getting your grunts to wield this probably isn't going to do too much, since infantry aren't normally fighting fully electronic enemies, have the reflexes to target in-air missiles or drones, and the power output that you would need to kill biologicals puts the weapon at too big for infantry to use. So it's probably better off being strapped to an APC and using it as point defense against drones and missiles, which might actually be the reason why in your sci-fi that drone warfare isn't used very much. Because in our real world, we're looking at right now the strong possibility that drone warfare is the primary form of war moving forward, and maybe the existence of this weapon justifies why there's no drones in your setting. Alright, and the last of our energy weapons, arc weapons. Now, these weapons are basically Zeus cannons. They launch a bolt of electricity out of the end to hit the target. But is that possible? Yes, technically. There's two ways this weapon, quote-unquote, works. And only one of them would actually work in real life. Could we create something that builds electricity until it arcs out of the end and a massive thunderclap and a lightning bolt shoots at it and motherfucks someone in the head? Yes, but be very inaccurate and you'd have no control over it whatsoever. Because it's going to try to ground itself as fast as possible, which probably means it'll go out a ways and then unpredictably ground itself into whatever is close enough to the arcing. Or it would go back into the gun and through you. But the second method is one we've created in real life. The LIPC, or laser-induced plasma channel weapon. This weapon basically shoots out a laser beforehand that reacts with the air to superheat it and cause a channel of highly conductive plasma before discharging electricity into that channel to electrocute the target. And since they tend to be very attracted to conducted materials, and we use this nowadays to destroy bombs, mines, and disable electronic systems. And since they tend to be very attracted to conductive materials, that's mostly what they're effective against. And, this would basically just be like getting hit by lightning. I don't think I need to go too in-depth on the damage here. You have seen what that's like. So the benefits of this is that, firstly, you're still engaging at light speed, since all these interactions happen at that speed. Each individual shot is also very cheap, especially compared to kinetic rounds. And you're also able to scale the shots up and down very well, with smaller varieties causing minor electroshock to larger varieties causing catastrophic damage to armored vehicles. Also, because it's attracted to conductive materials, you know it's going to hit a vehicle or something electronic and not just suddenly veer off course because there's some juicy, tasty background radiation or something. And because of this precision, you're going to be able to put it exactly where you want it unless you're trying to be cute about it or you're trying to hit a specific part of a vehicle that might be less conductive than surrounding parts. Like trying to shoot out someone's headlights for some reason. And like other energy weapons, it has a pretty low logistical overhead. On the downside, a LIPC could be very environmentally sensitive. Weather conditions, atmospheric turbulence, particulates, and intentional interference can all intercept the laser, disperse the plasma, or discharge the electricity. Which is why, in the real world, these are very short-range tools that are used, like, handheld. Now, while they require less power than lasers, they still require a lot of it. And they're vulnerable to countermeasures. From things having proper grounding, to high electrical resistance, to reduce the negative, to reduce or negate the effects. And if you wanted to overcome this, you'd have to increase the amount of time the target is getting hit, or the charge, to deal good damage. Both of which your opponent can try to get away from. There's also issues with the development and complexity, because trying to make a version of this that works at long range is really difficult, especially one that's still viable, which makes it very expensive, and then on top of that, because of how heavy, mechanically complex, and how prone they are to ionizing themselves and burning out, they're not field feasible in their current design. Which unfortunately means that while it'd be sick as hell as a weapon, it's probably better off as an engineering tool and for bomb disposal. Or, hell, a good tool for your engineers to have on hand to disable point defense, turrets, and heavy energy weapons while everyone else is focused on soft targets, because this thing should not be going for soft targets. And so we round out our energy weapons and begin our next category, projectile ballistic weapons. These are weapons that are mostly going to do their work with kinetic force and are basically different ways to get a very heavy, small thing very fast, very quickly. So first is the railgun. Railguns are guns that basically consist of two parts, a twin electromagnetic rail and a magnetically conductive ball. Basically, what you do is send power up one rail, magnetizing it, and then back down the other rail, creating a magnetic field that then carries and accelerates the ball at crazy fast speeds out the end and slamming into whatever poor unlucky asshole is standing in the way. Pretty simple, honestly, and if you have electromagnets, you can make one at home. Although not advisable. And now, the shot coming out of the end will absolutely kill you and also drop you to the ground. For example, modern railguns can hit a target at about 50 megajoules, which is about the same amount of force that a standard school bus going 316 miles per hour would do, hitting you square in the chest. So it would vaporize you, like lasers, but do it the hard way. And you absolutely know Miss Frizzle would get away with it too. Now, besides that, what's the benefit of railguns? Well, the velocity and lethality cannot be understated. We're talking about Mach 5 out the barrel. And these aren't pussy rounds. These are coke can chodes of high-mass slugs. The likelihood that anything short of the ground or the back wall of a concrete bunker would stop this shit is slim to none. The range is also insane, reaching hundreds of miles compared to similarly sized modern gunpowder weapons. And the ammunition is really cost-effective, you just need to shape something heavy and magnetic into a good cylinder or bullet shape, and you're good to go. You know, like iron, a skill humanity mastered thousands of years ago. You also don't need propellant, since these bad boys are pure magnets, meaning they're safer to handle, can carry more ammo, and require less of a tail. And because the action is simple, the ammo is simple, there's no propellant, and the breech can be open, you get a really fast rate of fire, all things considered. Alas, like we've been talking about with everything else, there are some issues. Firstly is one still haunting us from the energy weapons. Power. You need some very well-designed and precision capacitors, batteries, wiring, and housing for this weapon to be consistent and effective. Meaning you're probably better off mounting it and keeping it hooked up to a good power source. Even with good capacitors on current models, they take a while to charge up and after each shot, meaning that you can't really truly get a high rate of fire unless you fix that. And even if you could, the magnetic fields, friction of the barrel, the electrical discharge, all create some pretty significant heat. Meaning the firing rate would still be forcefully lowered and you'd want to keep them cool. but you're also going to want to replace the barrels often, because, like I said, these guys have some crazy friction. Combined with the pressure, magnets, heat, and constant charging and discharging, the barrels would start getting unsafe pretty fast. So you'd be replacing barrels pretty often over the course of a campaign, and all this makes the weapon really bulky and wasteful. Add on to the fact that the more juice, stronger magnets, and longer barrel, the better, which just adds to the bulk. So a theoretical infantry weapon would be a pain in the fucking ass to carry around with you, and you'd probably end up losing it pretty fast anyways. Which again, just implies that these things should really be mounted. They'd get easier access to logistics support, be able to be bigger, can also be a big fuck-off warning to stay away or face the wrath of God in anime. Of course, these would still be really good infantry weapons if we managed to figure it out. The likelihood we'd bother, though, is just small. Which kind of takes us to Gauss, or coil guns. And these are technically two separate things, but are essentially just a methodology difference for the same concept. These are weaponized Newton's cradles. If you're not familiar with the concept, it's that inertia is preserved between objects. So in the case of a Gauss gun, you basically have a line of balls in the barrel, and the back ball, the trigger ball, is released, which is then attracted to the magnetic ball next to it, and that impacts the ball next to it, and so on, until the effect of the magnet is minimal and the ball at the front is launched. Coil guns are the more practical application of the same idea, where basically the magnets are coiled around the barrel in their own separate housing, and as the shot is launched forward, it gets carried forward by the magnets around the coils, eventually launching it out of the front while the magnets return to rest. So basically, instead of moving the trigger ball, you're moving the magnets instead. And this would be pretty similar to just getting shot, so we're not going to talk about the damage or the effects. But the pros is that, firstly, the velocity. We're talking Mach 5 or Mach 6, which means higher damage and range than conventional weapons. They also have less of a bullet drop than conventional weapons. And because of that, combined with the velocity, they can be used at really high ranges accurately. They're also really stealthy because there's no muzzle flash and it's really quiet, although not silent. But still, pretty good stealth weapon. The recoil is very low for its relative damage, and compared to railguns especially, these things have very little heat. The ammo capacity can also be pretty big, since each individual shot can be small and still deal a lot of damage. And that ammo can literally be anything, as long as it's round and magnetic. Coil guns are also cool because they don't care about the medium you're firing in, meaning you can use them in normal air, in thick air, thin air, underwater, in molasses, and in a vacuum. Meaning for your star-conquering empire, they can do a British Empire on any planet that they want to. Now, obviously, this doesn't make it a perfect weapon. Firstly, it has very similar power requirements to railguns, making it bulky and requiring battery packs. And since the coils can't instantly demagnetize, your shots are going to have drag on them and it'll limit the velocity. But also, if the timing of the coils is off, it could just not fire or damage itself. All of which would require a specialist to re-time it, which makes your primary weapon garbage in the meantime. And while it has reduced heat compared to railguns, it still produces heat. And unfortunately, there's not really a native way in the system to deal with heat, and it's entirely a waste product, meaning you need to engineer a cooling system into the gun. Coil guns are also pretty goddamn heavy, given they have a large battery, complex magnetic coil, big magnetic ball magazine, and beefy cooling system. They also have a slow reload and firing rate, because if you fire too fast, you'll drain the batteries, and the capacitors have a limit on how much charge they can carry. So if you fire too fast, you'll overload the system and kill it. And, finally and most funny is that they produce high amounts of electromagnetic interference, which means the person using it, or if you're too close or the weapon is strong enough, it'll damage your electronics. And bigger models can even disable comms, drones, friendly vehicles, and energy weapons in a radius around it. Now, despite these weaknesses, these would still be a pretty good weapon. Not perfect, but good. It could even become a future primary weapon if we manage to find ways to manufacture smaller, more powerful batteries, manage the heat, and find lighter materials to make it out of. I mean, we'd also need to find a way to contain the magnetic field, but if we do that, then I think we've found the infantry weapon of the future. Or did we? Because, sure, coil guns are pretty cool, but we are ignoring something a bit more traditional with just a touch of the sci-fi. Flechettes. Now, this is less of a type of weapon itself and more a subtype of ballistics. This is a specific form of ballistics where instead of a bullet, the cartridge contains a small steel dart designed to fly extremely high speeds with minimal air resistance, recoil, and weapon stress. They're designed to be anti-personnel weaponry and are especially beloved by Israel to drop onto Palestinian hospitals, meaning they'll probably see use in the U.S. soon in case another mom tries to attempt a clear terrorist plot of parallel parking. Yeah, you thought I wasn't going to mention that? What in the rent-a-cop Gestapo is going on right now? Glad to see that the people of Minnesota stand up to it. Also glad to see that there's very little love or attempt at understanding happening. Good God. Anyways, what would a flechette do if it was fired at you? Well, as you might expect, a lot. See, flechettes are supposed to fly straight, but have a tendency to tumble. So while they can hit their target, pierce through, and cause a massive bleed with very little obvious external damage and lodge in there, it's actually far more likely that you'll get hit with one, it'll go in sideways, and rip open a pretty bad injury. Especially if fired from a shotgun or dropped from above. So what would be the benefit of using flechettes instead of bullets? Well, firstly, if you fire them from rifles, they'd have a pretty strong range and velocity because you have a narrow profile. But if you fire them from shotguns, they become excellent anti-personnel weapons because of the spread, and also because regardless of what you put in them, they can penetrate most body armors. Because they're really fast and small and pointed. Meaning they'll pierce through a lot of modern body armors designed to distribute the force of an impact from more blunt ammunition. They're also covert weapons, with lowered gunpowder making them quiet and have less recoil. There's, you know, also a wide variety of things you can do with flechettes. Basically, any modern weapon or bullet can be recreated. And you can make different shapes, weights, and materials for different purposes, like lightweight aluminum flechettes packed multiple to a cartridge to use against unarmored infantry, or heavy tungsten ones for single-shot anti-armor rifles. Flechettes are also very small, so you're getting extra magazine capacity. But this doesn't mean that they're going to see widespread use. Because if fired with a shotgun shell, they have really bad stability and accuracy. Or if you fire it too much. The flechettes are more likely to tumble and scatter, making them unstable and inaccurate. Also, when used with shotguns, they're gonna have a very short range, even compared to other types of shot. Now, while it still does make them dangerous, because, you know, they're still firing out, if they're tumbling, their range is greatly reduced. But in general, taking all kinds of weapons they can use with flechettes, they also have issues with being low mass and lightweight, meaning that they're more likely to bend and break on impact than just, like, piercing through hard armor. Machining them is also very complicated and costly, and the firearms that would work best would also be more costly and complicated to make. Combined, they also, for most roles, are kind of suboptimal, especially compared to a solid shot. Those tend to work better, honestly. So, will it replace our standard firearms? Probably not. I mean, sure, there is a future where these replace guns, but it won't be for very long, because laser weapons are already kind of around the corner, so the odds that flechettes outcompete them is unlikely. we might see some use as a specialist weapon for a while, as, you know, something that can get truly insane rates of fire and do damage to a ton of light targets, or as larger versions that can take on aircraft, but it will probably never... But it will probably never dethrone lasers or gunpowder. Speaking of which, ballistic weapons, or traditional ballistic weapons, or bullets, ballistics, we're just going to call them today, are the same weapons that we use today. They use a combustion reaction in an enclosed space to accelerate a bullet at massive speeds directly into the vital organs of all right pundits. Also, if any of them die right after this episode, I did not tell anyone to do that. I'm just making an obscure reference to a Minecraft server that I play on. Now, here's the thing about ballistic weapons. These are actually surprisingly effective for what they are and how long we've had them. And the likelihood that there's much in the galaxy we can harness that comes close to this efficiency is unlikely. But before I slob the knob too much, let's talk about pros and cons. I'm assuming you know how well they work, given, you know, the world. So the first benefit is that there's a lot of range and accuracy in these weapons. I mean, most rifles have a range of about 1,000 yards. Although, I mean, that part is without much accuracy. While it's lower than some of the weapons we've discussed, it's significantly more than most of them. Also, assuming you know what you're doing, you can usually put it exactly where you mean to. It's also a lot of force and energy for what you're putting into it. Gunpowder weapons and traditional ballistics have insane firepower for their relative energy. For context, the same amount of energy going into a laser wouldn't even be noticeable, but it's enough for a 5.56 round to kill a man. They're also highly versatile, even going super sci-fi. Bullets can be made of different materials, cased or caseless, different calibers or sizes, can be jacketed or naked, filled with explosives, be a fucking gyrojet, as stupid as that is, be coated in something, use different combustion methods. And all of this is before we talk about the guns themselves. The sheer massive variety you can have with these guns is so much that you can tell a gun nut a year, brand name, designated title, and chamber of a weapon, and they still need more information before they can even picture the gun you're talking about. Now, besides that, they're also highly resilient to environmental conditions, and depending on the weapon, can be extremely abused, mistreated, and buried, and then be dug up and not fire, because the gunpowder got too old. They're also capable of massive damage, and are very light to carry around and are easy to use, especially compared to a lot of the shit we've already talked about. Of course, not to suck the Glock, let's talk about why we'd want to replace them. Besides them being boring. Firstly, guns are expensive. Like, start to finish, from design and concept through to manufacturing to distribution and logistics to the individual troop maintenance. Guns are not cheap weapons. And while yes, you can make one in your garage with literally 3 power tools and one of them is optional if you're real fucking nuts, to use them in a military sense takes a lot of time and money. They're also pretty complex to design, and modern guns have a lot of moving parts, which makes them such good weapons, but it also means there's more that can go wrong. And it makes the maintenance very important, because sure, if nothing goes wrong, a lot of guns can keep operating after decades of use. But the more parts you have, and the longer they serve, the odds of nothing going wrong grow smaller, meaning there's more maintenance involved than something like a coil gun or a plasma thrower. These are also weapons that require specialist training to get really good at, because of the recoil, complexity and maintenance, danger in handling them, and proper usage techniques. You need to be trained to handle these weapons as well, more than you would for simpler to use weapons with less recoil. These weapons also have a pretty big environmental footprint. And while you might think that I mean in mining resources or think I'm a libbed up pussy, that's not what I mean. While yes, the manufacturing has some big environmental impacts, and the manufactured gunpowder can cause harm if not done correctly, I actually mean usage. Because one, gunpowder residue is not great just to have in the air and water, which happens with very heavy usage of gunpowder weaponry, like what would happen in planetary invasions. On top of that, the amount of metal, i.e. brass, that would litter the ground in the case of massive world-scale invasions would cause a massive mess. And the lead causes both, because every time you fire a gun, a tiny amount of lead gets released into the air, and then probably into your lungs. Also, the bullets that they miss don't just despawn. That's now a clump of lead out there somewhere. And because of that, because these weapons cause increased destruction and penetration the bigger they get, you also risk a massive collateral damage risk. So really, if you want the world you're conquering after the fact, the amount of cleanup you'll be doing from firing ballistic weapons alone is a lot. Now, as you can probably see from the pros and cons list there, we're not getting rid of these things anytime soon. Because they're efficient, effective, easy to use, easy to store, can be used just about anywhere humans want to fight for things, and we know what they're capable of. And that cons list was mostly nitpicks and no-shit kind of answers, but it's important for your sci-fi stuff to keep those in mind. Once a galactic power reaches a certain size, using primarily ballistics will become a less and less viable option. But that's it for the ballistics, so let's round out our list with the weirdest fuck weapons. These are going to be even more speculative, since we're pretty sure that we could maybe at some point use these, but that's really unlikely. And we're starting with antimatter. Antimatter weapons are weapons that use a tiny bead of antimatter to interact with matter. And if you don't know, antimatter is a substance proposed to explain why our calculations say there's both electrons and negative electrons at the same time. I'm not sure, I'm not smart enough to understand, but these are the same calculations that have proven black holes, and we've also found some and created some antimatter. But the substance reacts violently with matter, turning it directly into energy and annihilating both the matter and the antimatter, which, if you know the amount of energy the matter contains, is a lot. Like 0.3 grams of antimatter is enough to create a blast about the size of the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. So if you got shot with antimatter, well, let's just imagine that. Antimatter hits you in the upper bicep, and now you and your entire squad no longer exist as reality jitters like a Bethesda game hard crashing. So what's the good parts of using antimatter as a gun? Well, it's very energy dense. It's essentially a one-hit kill on anything that you can hit. Literally. A few dozen molecules of antimatter can bring down just about anything. And it's not like you're going to face something you can't kill. They're also relatively clean, energetic reactions. There's no lingering radiation, electromagnetic or otherwise. Which, hey, that sounds pretty good, but, yeah, that's it. That's all the benefits you're going to get out of this. So let's talk about why it sucks. First of all, the astronomical expense. While we've only ever technically made 1 gram of it, it was worth about $62.5 trillion in 1999. Nowadays, we're looking at $121.25 trillion, which is about 27% of the entire world's total financial assets. 3 fucking grams would bankrupt the planet Earth, which means the likelihood that anything would use this as ammunition is fucking bonkers. Now, also, it doesn't replenish very fast, because a particle accelerator is only able to produce a few nanograms of the stuff a year. Which means you're going to have essentially none of it available. And since it's so volatile, storage and magazines would be a fucking nightmare. Even if you were able to create enough to even have a magazine, how are you going to store these things? Well, that means you have to engineer a highly complex magnetic field, vacuum chambers, and batteries to keep it all contained, which, as you can imagine, is not easy. The range is also very questionable, because maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's as far as you can create a vacuum tunnel, which is especially not good because you cannot, in any way, control the amount of damage these things cause. Once it's fired, any contact with matter causes instant, complete annihilation. Accidentally fire too much, everyone dies. Get a breach in the weapon, everyone dies. The magazine's magnetic field fails, everyone dies. So clearly, never gonna happen. Because it's too goddamn impractical. and its job can be done just as easily by 100 kilograms of high explosives. Especially because the best use for antimatter would be in bombs, because, you know, we have nukes. We could just use those. Next is vibrational weaponry, also called acoustic weapons. These are pressure waves of sound that cause pain and damage by vibrating the object. Nowadays, we primarily use this for non-lethal crowd control, but in theory, it could be cranked up to lethal levels. And they work through two different methods, infrasound and ultrasound. Infrasound uses low frequencies to match the resonant frequencies of objects, causing them to experience tremors that increase in intensity until the structure collapses. While ultrasound uses high-intensity waves to harm people by actually just being, in scientific terms, loud as shit and turning into a pressure wave. In the first case, if you were hit with one, your organs would just kind of pop and turn into jelly and you'd fall over dead. In the second case, your ears would bleed first. Yeah, not very pleasant. Now, the first benefit of using these would be that they can both be tuned down to be non-lethal, which, if you need to ask why that's a good thing, you'd need some fucking therapy. They're both also surprisingly stealthy, because while it's noise, one is too high for most humans to hear and the other is too low. Meaning they're great espionage weapons, especially because most of their non-lethal effects are hard to even single out anyways. There's also no massive heat, chemical residue, or radiation, which means there's no real lingering after effects to use these, which is probably what you want if you're trying to actually habitate the land you're fighting over. For ultrasonic weapons, you're able to tune the noise to specific targets, targeting younger opponents to cause them the non-lethal effects of the weapon. They're also easily aimable, meaning you can precisely put the shot exactly where you want. Infrasonic weapons, meanwhile, have very long range and have very good penetration, meaning it's usable from a distance through walls, which also so happens to mean that they can pierce armor, ear protection included. Because while ultrasonic weapons can be protected against through pressure and sound insulation, infrasonic weapons cannot. Infrasonic weapons also cause more panic, fear, irritation, and disorientation compared to the headaches, discomfort, and dizziness of ultrasonic weapons, making both effective psychological weapons, but infrasonic weapons are able to cause routs sooner, which might be preferable depending on what you want out of these. Now, on the other side of this is that both weapon types are very indiscriminate. The sound can bounce, but also hit everyone within range. Because if you can't cushion or ensure a perfect or near-perfect transfer with ear protection, everyone's getting white girl wasted. In this case, white girl wasted means severe chest pains, panic attacks, and bleeding, irritation, migraine, ear ringing, and organ rupture. Maybe. See, the other downside is we've actually never done that. Because this was developed as a non-lethal weapon, and we have better lethal ones. We haven't really done a lot of research into using sound like this. See, in theory it works, but we haven't put that much juice into it before. And given that the health effects of this thing being on your side hasn't been studied yet, we don't want to. So in practice, it could just do nothing. And of course, they're hard to control. Infrasonic weapons have the specific problem of causing pretty substantial structural damage too, so it's like a flamethrower, but loud and also spraying fire in every direction. Why do we want this exactly? Ultrasonic weapons, meanwhile, would be very short range, and the only way to make sure its range is high enough to matter would be to give it a whole lot of power, which, at that point, just use a laser. So is this ever going to see a usage? It's possible, but I don't see it. Well, it's kind of cool and silly in the 40K kind of way to kill people with the skeleton trumpet sound effect and bass boosted out the ass. It's very hard to justify ever producing lethal versions because the exact thing that makes them good is also what makes them terrible for everyone around them, especially the operators. Which more likely is that these will be the future crowd control rather than military weaponry. And now, finally for today, we have graviton weapons. These use theoretical graviton particles to attach the molecules of the target, effectively increasing their gravity by some massive amount, to the point where it kills you, And this is entirely the realm of sci-fi. We're not even dealing with things we know exist, but assumedly getting shot with this would be a big squish, and then you're dead. Now, on the good side, you can get some pretty extreme force out of this thing. Not like instant enervation force, but using an object's own mass against it is a pretty good way to cause some really serious damage, especially to the internal structures. And because of that, it not only bypasses armor, but makes it an active detriment, which also means it's pretty good at crippling vehicles. Now, real life isn't 40k, so it's not like the other ways to kill vehicles cause them to catastrophically explode, but it's still pretty dangerous to kill one. So is this method safer? Nominally, but it's not like the vehicle is all that unstable. Now, much like other weapons we've discussed, this is void usable, but its void usage actually makes it a lot stronger than them, because you can suddenly make spaceships, not designed to exist within a gravity environment, now be crushed under the weight of itself, something it was not designed to sustain. Of course, there's a pretty significant issue with graviton weapons. Where's the gravitons, Mansley? Yeah, we've never actually found gravitons. We don't know where they are, if they are, and if we can even harvest them. But if they're the particle in charge of causing gravity, well, what happens when you take them away to use them for something else? And assuming that we could harvest them, it's not like they just stop working when they're gathered. Because if they make gravity, then obviously they're going to be insanely heavy in the magazine of any weapon that uses them. Because the weight of the weapon would be equal to the weight of the gravitons can increase things to, which is not helpful. Same with the range issues. It'd be very difficult to get the gravitons to get anywhere. And this ignores our normal power concerns, because the amount of energy you would need would be as much energy as is required to counteract the energy of the gravitons if you don't want to weigh literally the size, if you don't want to weigh literally as much of a planet, and also to shoot them, which that combined might be more energy than what is on the planet Earth. And once it's out of the weapon, well, you can't corral gravity, so it'll just kind of do its own thing, meaning you have zero accuracy, precision, or control. So of course we end off with a weapon that will always be sci-fi, because even we could make this, it wouldn't work, and the odds that we could even build it is lower than my flaccid dick, which is to say, micrometers from the dirt. And with that, we've reached the end of our very long episode. Again, sorry for the delays, this has not only been a bitch to research and write and record, but getting sick and everything on top of that, and also, you know, I'm finishing this during my week-long vacation. Funnily enough, most of our ideas for sci-fi weapons are actually fairly reasonable and possible, assuming that we keep getting better and better battery technology. It's also kind of cool to think about a lot of the sci-fi weapons we write about already being around. Anyways, thank you so much for watching and listening. Hopefully next week we'll come back with a shorter episode. If you have opinions, improvements, corrections, and anything else you want to talk about, comment below or email me at waytappods@gmail.com. And remember to like, share, and subscribe for more. And follow my podcast feed for audio versions, and come back next time when we talk about dragons and why they're so scary. Have a good night, don't murder, have fun, and remember, always turn your weapons to Wumbo. This has been Why Aren't You Talking About This, and I've been your host, William. Good night.